Hi, everyone. My name is Josh Nason, and this is Josh Nason's Punch-Out here in WrestlingObserver.com. Joining me this week, very special guest, a first-time guest, somebody who you might not know by name, but someone you've probably definitely heard his voice if you've watched any MLW throughout the last year plus, if you've watched any indie promotions in the Northeast United States, or even on IWTV or YouTube or the like. He is Rich Paladino. Rich has been a ring announcer for 31 years, working hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of shows throughout the years. And I wanted to have Rich on because I've seen him a ton of times and I'm always interested in the story and stories of people that have been there up and down the roads, literally thousands of times and thousands of miles. And Rich had a lot of stories. So he and I talked for just over an hour about pretty much everything. How's a guy like that get into the business? How's he keep staying in the business? The different things he has to do. People he's seen along the way, met along the way, all kinds of cool stories. So I think you're going to enjoy. So if you're into kind of the backstage workings of wrestling and some of the people that really put the help make the shows what they are and put a bow on them, Rich is a great one to talk to. And this is a great conversation. So without further ado, let's get to the voice himself, Rich Paladino. One fall, Rich Paladino on this week's Josh Nason's Punch-Out. Enjoy. Well, I'm very pleased, proud to welcome for the first time ever on this show, someone that I have seen from afar, not too far, but from afar in Yarmouth AmVets in Yarmouth, Maine, other venues, I'm sure, throughout the years. And as a former ring announcer alumni, I'm glad to have him on. The one and only Rich Paladino, you've heard him, his dulcet tones, so to speak, in the rings of MLW, plenty of Northeast Indies. He's got a very full March dance card here of Chaotic Wrestling, Beyond Wrestling, of course, my home fed, Limitless Wrestling in Maine, and over 30 years in the business. And we're going to talk all about his career and more on this very show. Rich, I know we're chatting for about 15 minutes, but officially welcome to the podcast.
Great to be here. I appreciate it. And like I said at the outset, I'm like, we've probably locked eyes or shook hands somewhere along the way.
Exactly. But, yeah.
Once I knew you were affiliated with the Limitless podcast, I figured you were legit. So
yeah, I try to be just despite Randy and my best efforts, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny. Cause again, I try to do this a lot, talk to people that we see so much at shows and kind of can take for granted at times. Cause they're just part of the show, cause it's all about the in-ring and so on, but your ring announcers is someone that has done it to myself to a much, much, much smaller extent than you have. The ring announcer is just as important to the show as anything else. And we've seen it through movies and pop culture and things like that, the big fight feel and the boxing announcers and things like that.
Yeah.
Wrestling announcers are wrestling. The ring announcers are just as important and can really set a tone. And you've seen crowds that have been rabid. I'm sure you've seen crowds that are very light. But no matter what, you can't match that level. You have to bring up the level, and no matter what, one person or 500 or 1,000, the volume is still going to be the same.
Yeah, and I always try and make every match from the first match to the main kind of feel like the main event of WrestleMania. I know it sounds kind of cliche, but they're the athletes. They're the ones that are taking the bumps and the bruises and the cuts and the contusions and everything else that comes with it. So who am I to not give them like the biggest thing? But I've never let myself be bigger than my role. Like my job is to enhance the talent, not to overshadow. So I take my job very seriously. I love what I do. And I like to bring that big fight feel, especially at Limitless, where we do everything boxing style, which tests my brain. Cause I'm over 31 years in doing this.
Yeah.
I'm in my mid 50s, but I still love every minute of it. But being in that makes me feel like I'm still in like my 20s.
When you say boxing style, why don't you explain what that means?
Boxing style being when both wrestlers or both tag teams, when everybody's in the ring,
got it.
Then they go to me and in this corner and in that corner, as opposed to when they're coming out to the ring, which sometimes you get drowned out by the music, depending on the venue and the promotion and what have you. But mm-hmm. I love doing it that way because that's the one time that the spotlight is actually on me, you know, doing my job. But to me, I like doing it better. I like it doing it better that way because the fans can actually hear who these people are that I'm introducing because they don't know every single, they don't know every wrestler on an independent card. And I think a lot of times, like I said earlier, it gets drowned out by the music, whereas this is much more in your face, big fight feel. And yeah, I love it.
So you mentioned 31 years in. So you started in the late 90s. How did you first get into this? I know that your fandom, I did some research, Rich. Your fandom began probably before this, but really on March 8th, 1980, at the Boston Garden. Bruno Sammartino, correct, if I remember right?
That was the anniversary, the very first time I ever went to a live show. So I already stated mid-50s. I was 10 years old in March of 1980, and I went to the Boston Garden for the very first time. And I grew up single-parent household with a very overprotective mother. God rest her soul, love her to death. But that first time that she let me go with my friend and his dad took us into the Boston Garden that March 8th of 1980. My God, I'd be lying if I didn't tell you we were like 3 rows from the back of a sold-out Boston Garden. Like, I was just that. I was like Christmas, New Year's, everything rolled into one. I'm like, I'm actually here because I'd only watched it on TV for a couple of years at that point. So to actually be there was, you know, they always say there's nothing like being there live. There really isn't, you know, even in this day and age. Of course, it costs a lot more.
Just a little bit,
Yeah, because my son was home this weekend and I was showing him the program because it was on a Saturday and he was home for the weekend. And I had shown him, I'm like, look at this friggin' program. It was a dollar. Now you get this like monstrous like concert tour book for like 20, 25 bucks if you go to a WWE event. I couldn't even tell you, tickets were probably $3, $4. Now I sound like my dad, who's still with us at close to 88 years old. Sharp as a tack, but now I sound like my dad. So I'm like, honest to God, like I think the ringside seats were probably like $7, $8, maybe. Mid tier was like five, and then nosebleeds where I was were probably $3 or $4. It's incredible, man. I'm old. I'm
You and
old,
me both.
but
You and me both.
yeah.
So then, so then how did you how'd you first start get into the business part of it and actually doing this and being part of the show?
So I always wanted to. I always knew that I didn't have the physical capabilities to actually be a worker, a wrestler. I played high school football. That was like the extent of it. I could bang into people, but the flips and everything that comes with it. So I always thought that being the announcer or commentator would be a cool gig, but I always gravitated to the ring announcer. So in 1991, I met a guy. I went to this independent show at the Lowell Auditorium out here in Massachusetts, Lowell, Massachusetts. It was called the American Wrestling Federation. And I went with, you know, a friend of mine, drove out there. I used to live in a town called Reading, which was like maybe 20, 25 minutes away. And it was like a glorified, it was like the biggest thing I'd ever seen that wasn't like WWF or WCW at the time. They had Nikita Koloff, Junkyard Dog, Nikolai Volkoff, Jim Cornette, Stan Lane. There were like 16 matches. They were taping for worldwide TV, which never saw the light of day. So, anyways, you fast forward a month after that show, I met the guy at a WWF show in the same building in Lowell that was the promoter for that AWF. And I only identified him because that night they had like five or six different ring announcers. Which, as a kid that always wanted to be a ring announcer, I'm sitting in the front row in my baseball hat, you know, yay, wrestling. So I went up to him. I said, "Are you the ring announcer from that AWF?" He's like, "Actually, I own the company." Could go on and on forever. Struck up a friendship with him. He told me to make him an audio cassette, which I did, of me just ring announcing random names from 1991, 1992, whatever. And he's like, "All right, that's it. You're hired. I'm going to be doing this. I'm going to be doing that. You're going to need a tuxedo. Go buy a tuxedo and give me the bill." I said, "It's going to go one of two ways." Bought a $300 brand new tux at Mr. Tux at the Burlington Mall in Burlington, Mass. And I'm like, "Oh God." He gave me a check for the $300 tuxedo. Never ran a show.
Oh no.
His name was Gordon Scozzari. So he's part of wrestling lore. He passed away many, many years ago. There's a whole backstory that could be a podcast in itself. But he introduced me to Tony Rumble. So when he couldn't do a show, put on a show for me to be able to ring announce, he's like, "How do you feel about doing commentary?" Like, sure. I ended up doing commentary for that same show that I was sitting like in the front row for,
Wow.
with the Boston Bad Boy Tony Rumble,
Yep.
who broke me in 93. And that was, so this was in April, I want to say like April 6th of 92. I'm in a studio somewhere up in Maine with the studio that the Savoldis used to use.
Oh, so probably
Like,
like Lewiston area, like that.
yes.
Yep.
Yeah, it was like they used to do like remotes like from the studio. I would see Brian Webster and Tony Rumble in that studio because I remember a brick wall on the side. I'm sitting at that desk with Tony. He was one of the bookers for that AWF show, so he was connected with this guy, Gordon, and he and I end up doing play-by-play. Those things never saw the light of day, but they are all over the interwebs now. But Tony started running shows in 93, and he just called me and said, "Hey, I'm going to start promoting shows. You want to be the ring announcer?" "Yes, indeed. I got this tuxedo. I might as well put it to use." So yeah, so I did my that's how it all. It's a very long, drawn out story, but it's usually better told at a bar. But there's so many layers to it. But that was it. It was from going to that one random show, meeting the promoter, and then eventually working alongside somebody that I watched on TV. My mentor, the late Boston Bad Boy Tony Rumble.
Yeah, get
So
out of here. Yeah.
October 23rd, 1993 was the first live show I ever did in Wakefield, Massachusetts, which is the town over from where I grew up. I mean, I used to play football against Wakefield High School when I played for Reading High School. So yeah, it's a I don't know, Cinderella story, I guess.
Yeah.
It's good stuff though.
New England is so for those people that aren't listening, you should be as lucky as have a collection of states so close and so different as New England, and especially when it comes to wrestling, because again, that you look at it all through Massachusetts. This is through history. Like Maine, you mentioned the Savoldis. There was EWA, which you and I were talking about before, that I did I ring announcing for. There was a promotion I remember it started in Bangor when I was in college, I think Rampage Pro it was called that. I mean, Massachusetts, now that there's so many Massachusetts, in Vermont, there's Green Mountain Wrestling, and like there's Rhode Island and Connecticut, and just there's so many. It's everything is so different, and it's like you pull on one thread, it's just like, oh yeah, like you were mentioning the Savoldis and this, and I remember IWCCW, and like you start to think of all these things, and New England has such a rich such a rich wrestling history that it's fascinating to me that one thread and all of a sudden it's just like, oh yeah, I know this person, this person, this person. And
I've been very fortunate too to see all the people that came through, you know. I mean, I always tell people like right before I broke in the business, I went to a Killer Kowalski promoted IWF, the International Wrestling Federation. That was his banner. And I went to a show at the Liberty Tree Mall in Danvers, Massachusetts.
okay.
And I saw a young guy by the name of Terra Rising on that show when I was, you know, in the middle of a mall, in the atrium of a mall. I saw Triple H, one of his very first matches. You know, and I mean, just, and then eventually, like, working in the independent scene and then being on shows that Kowalski was at, it's just I've seen so many things. It's just been ridiculous. It's so many names and so many like guys that I would just travel with that are now making good money on TV and stuff like that. It's just it makes me happy because being as old as I am, I feel like they're all like my kids anyways.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just and it's been a hotbed. It's, you know, there's lots of debates and discussions, but wrestling in New England, independent wise, has turned out some amazing friggin' talent
Yeah,
that's, you know, making millions now.
I was gonna ask you because doing this for so long, you've probably announced so many people that people see every single week and on TV, and then some. Some people get out of the business. Some people, as you mentioned, made millions. What is there one that you is your I want to say your Mount Rushmore, that question kind of like, is there one that just like this means the most, and is there someone that you've always wanted to have make that announcement for that you still have not got to yet?
Wow. Wow. I would say Triple H being a New England guy, but I did get to introduce him at Killer Kowalski's like 80th birthday or 70th birthday show that another promoter had run. I ended up being the ring announcer, and so I got to announce Hunter Hearst Helmsley in like 1997. Yeah, I don't even I can't even wrap my head around that. I wish I wish we had a format before this. I would have done some homework. Because when I look at it now, it's like when I watch TV, I'm like, oh, Carmelo Hayes. Geez, I remember him when he first
Christian
started. Biff
Casanova,
Busick. Yeah. Oney Lorcan, who's now, an agent for he's actually a trainer, producer at NXT now. Like I knew him in the very beginning. Ivar from the Viking Raiders. I dare say I probably announced him under four or five different other names throughout the years. Tommaso Ciampa when he was Thomas Penmanship. And then it kind of comes full circle because I still keep in touch with these guys. It's limited, a DM, a text, whatever. When they're home, I usually have an opportunity to say hello and stuff like that. But then there's guys like Donovan Dijak, specimen himself, who I also knew when he first started like training at Chaotic. And now he's like one of the main guys at MLW. So it's like that very comforting thing where I'm not the outsider. I have other New England friends, especially Dijaks. A lot of times we'll drive to and from the shows together and stuff like that.
Oh, really?
It's
Okay.
yeah. I mean, he's a nasty heel over there in MLW, but I've known him since like we used to have a guy at Chaotic Wrestling. His name was Tony Omega. That was his wrestling name. And he was like the head of security. And everybody that came up through Chaotic before they wrestled matches, they were part of Omega Security. And they would have a gray t-shirt that said Omega Security sitting at
Omega Secure.
ringside.
That sounds familiar.
Yeah. And like Dijak was one of those guys. Kofi Kingston was one of those guys.
Oh, that's right.
He
Yeah,
was
it's
like,
from Jamaica Plain. Yeah.
yeah. So he was like a security guy, before, you got the whole thing. I mean, Mercedes Moné used to be the timekeeper when she first started training. She was like my assistant at the table. Like she was just learning how to wrestle. And she would sit at the table and I'd be like, all right, yeah, just ring the bell. I'll run the stopwatch. We'll do blah, blah, blah. Two or three shows later, she was already like match ready. That's how good Mercedes is. But yeah, it sounds like I'm name dropping, but these are actual people that I worked with on a regular basis, like every weekend. It's insane.
Have
Absolutely
you
insane.
now has for the most part, I know, through scrolling through your Instagram and so on, play of pictures with people that people everyone recognized, lost smiles and things like that. Have you I'm sure you've run into wrestlers and so on along the way that weren't as kind or appreciative for what you do.
Yeah, there's always some. There's always like that big name I'm excited to announce. I won't say any names, but there was like former WWF superstars when I first started in. I was like so excited to meet them, and then they couldn't have been bothered to shake my hand or anything. I will say everybody that's gone on and done big things now, like hasn't forgotten about who I am or anything like that. They never like, big league me or anything like that. Not that we're talking on a daily, weekly, monthly basis or anything, but it's still like when I see them or when we talk, it's always like very cordial. They always remember, which is nice. Yeah, but no, I really haven't run into anybody that's made it that just kind of like thought they were better than, me or anybody else. Because hey, the people you see on the way up, you're going to see on the way back down. So,
That's true.
that's my whole stance on that. So,
I mean, I think you, I was going to expect you to mention MJF because I mean, you've announced him plenty of times, and he does say he's better than you, with everyone. So,
well, and I think maybe I have the picture on my Instagram. There's a picture of him in England, and I think we did like a t-shirt trade or something. He had like my first like one fall t-shirt, and there's a picture of like I think he was in England, and he was like just taking one of those pictures where he's like either flipping off or not thrilled to take a picture with somebody, and he's wearing my t-shirt. It's like the greatest thing ever. And Max was one of those guys that I was thinking of as I was rattling off all the names. I haven't seen him in a long time. I can tell you we've communicated online a time or two, and he's always been more than cordial. I haven't seen him in forever. I hope to see him again someday, but he was just always one of those guys like that was working at Beyond. He was working at Chaotic, obviously the former Limitless Wrestling world champion. Was always super complimentary of my work, because I would always add a little something when I was I called him Salt of the Earth one night, because he would always say it in promos when he was doing indies. And it was like, after that, he was like, I like how you added Salt to the Earth. I'm like, well, it adds a little bit of something to what we're doing here. And now he's doing very, very well for himself. But yeah, he's special talent.
Yes. That's one thing I was going to ask you about is your preparation. So, a lot of people, they see announcers that they have cards that they read off and so on. And I've noticed that you have a lot of memorization. I think probably because you've announced some of these people, these guys so often, having, regular work in all these places. But yeah, I kind of want to ask you your preparation on game day. How do you kind of go about things? When do you show up at the building? And how, tell kind of explain kind of what your process is when you go to a place, either a place you've been to before or maybe a place you've been to for the first time.
Yeah, so preparation actually starts long before show day. Like right now, right behind me, I have a notebook and my roster and a stack of index cards that I've already started preparing for this Thursday's Wrestling Open. I have maintained an Excel spreadsheet for 15 or 20 years. So if I say your name once, I have it on this flash drive that I keep handy at my desk, and I never go anywhere without it. And I just keep that updated because there's enough going on. You've seen it in your travels in ring announcing back in the day. Do I really need to interrupt a talent and be like, okay, what's your hometown? What's your weight? So I keep that all updated. And then if they tell me, oh, hey, I'm not 215 anymore, I'm 225, or I don't want to be from Bangor, Maine, I want to be from Portland, Maine, whatever, I literally make the note on my card, come home, update this so I don't have to bother everybody. My favorite thing to say is you can plunk me in the middle of any independent show in New England, and chances are I know 85, 90% of your roster. And I felt like that came to fruition when I started doing MLW, because it was so many guys that I had worked with and all these top independent promotions that I work for. So it made that transition easy. But I'll spend a good 30, 45 minutes writing up the cards, any sponsorships, all that stuff, because I do want to memorize stuff, but I do have index cards. Sometimes I tuck it up the sleeve of my tuxedo jacket. Sometimes it's in my hand behind my back opposite the hard cam, because I am a 55-year-old man, and sometimes I have what I like to call senior moments. And the worst thing I want to do is stumble on my words or anything while I'm doing what I do. But yeah, there's a lot of guys: Anthony Green, Dijak, the going back, Chase Del Monte, the Logan brothers. I knew all their like intros, by heart. And there's now a newer crop of guys and girls that I know by heart, but it's sometimes it's that other that the indie darling from the Midwest that I've only seen on a video or something. It's my first time and I don't want to screw it up. I may peek at the card, but I do a lot of prep, and I sometimes have three, four shows a weekend. So that's why I've already started laying out this week's Wrestling Open. And I don't want to date stamp like when we're recording, but this coming weekend I know I have Wrestling Open on Thursday, Chaotic Wrestling on Friday, Live Pro Wrestling on Saturday. Next weekend it's Open, and I'm coming up to Portland for Limitless, and then I've got Focus Pro in Braintree. I have like my next 3 weekends are like Thursday, Friday, Saturday shots. And I work a 9 to 5. I mean, I'm part of corporate America. I won't say where, but I mean, I have a 9 to 5 that takes up a lot of time. So I always say it's a good Thursday night if I can show up in street clothes and not have to like literally put on my tuxedo here and leave the house at like 6, 6:30 at night, because the shoot job consumes so much of my time. Because, well, let's face it, that's what keeps the lights on
Yeah,
and the
same
water
here.
running. Yeah,
Same here.
so it's like, I never take my full-time job for granted. I'm just blessed to be able to do both, and keep my head on. My head's always on a swivel, but be able to keep my head on straight. But it's a good break though from corporate America to, oh, I'm gonna go say names at the old wrestling show tonight, and it offsets all the who's mad at me, or what project do I have to get done, and what's the deadline on this? Like, okay, I know Thursday night I'll be saying names at a wrestling show. That's that, it, and that's a perfect break. And soon Monday nights, because Wrestling Open's going to be doing Monday night shows in Rhode Island starting March 31st.
There you go.
So I'm going all over the place. I ramble.
Oh, it's good. That's what a podcast is for. Open
Yes, sir.
conversation, you know? So I was going to add, so as you mentioned, kind of going like with MJF, you add that salt to the earth. How do you, is it just kind of a sense you get when to, when you want to add a little something to a person's intro? Is that communication with them? Or how do, how, like, is there every, all situations a little bit different?
Most it, everything's a little bit different. If it's like an independent guy and I think it's going to add a little something, I'll just do it on the fly. If it's somebody established, like that MJF, that we were at the Portland Expo. It was him against AG for the Limitless title.
At the big
It was,
anniversary show, yeah.
yes, and it was that night that I just was doing the big long drawn out intro. He's better than you and you know it, but I had just added in salt to the earth, and he complimented me for it at the end of the night. It just felt right. A lot of times I will communicate with the talent and be like, hey, are you okay with this? Whether it's verbally, before the show. Sometimes like, no, don't do that. Just do this, this, and this. Okay. I remember texting Dijak when he was back in the area, and I literally texted it out to him like, do you mind if I start saying welcome to the Dijak hijack? Because he was saying it in all his promos. I don't do it everywhere. I do, but I, when it feels right, it adds a little something. Or how many nicknames did I have for Alec Price back in the day? And he
Right.
informed me, he goes, just go Northeast Beast now.
Yeah.
No cap. I'm like, okay, got you. But yeah, so sometimes I take creative liberty, but a lot of times I do want to run it by them first because I don't want them to kind of like be looking at me like, what? What?
Yeah.
Who told you to do that? So yeah, I don't know. Like I said, I take my job way too seriously.
And then there's sometimes the dastardly Sydney Bacabella just makes your job too easy and takes a microphone and does his spiel for a few minutes introducing Channing Thomas.
I could
That's all
never
you
do all
can.
that. I really could. I can never remember all of those lines.
I
So
know
it's,
it's crazy, right? It's amazing.
I just know what my cue is when he says the Count of Monte Fisto. I'm supposed to just make a fist. So, yeah, the Bacabella show. That's another podcast in itself. Dude's a legend.
So do you remember Butterbean, the boxer Butterbean? So I was looking through because there was he's working WrestleCon in Las Vegas against Minoru Suzuki with Dan Severn as a special enforcer. So I was just going through his cage match because I was doing a post for it, and I'm like, I recognize that name. It's Butterbean defeated Sydney Bacabella. That actually happened once. Yeah, you probably announced it. It's in there somewhere.
I didn't announce it, but I've had the pleasure of traveling with Bacabella a time or two, and I'll tell you, those are some of the best road stories you're ever going to hear in your life.
Yeah.
Plus he's a former military man too.
Really? I didn't know that.
But I mean, he's a very he's a wealth of knowledge, and you'd be surprised just the ideas and things that he wants. I mean, you already see what he does in the ring, but he'll always he's always got great ideas. He's a very, very special talent. He's one of a kind. Like, just such a throwback to what an old school manager was like, especially in this day and age where, like, I grew up watching Fred Blassie, Lou Albano, and the Grand Wizard. Like, they were like staple managers. And then as years went on, the managers became like less of a focal point.
Right.
And even to, I want to say, like, I don't know, late 90s, early 2000s, like, managers weren't even like going on the road for like house shows and stuff. Bacabella is like made like being a manager or having a manager cool.
Yeah.
And and he he's put in the time and has training and can have matches and always adds so much to every show. So whether it's sending everybody home with the miserable puss on their face, like recruiting AG recently up at Limitless and all
That's
that.
right. That's right. Yep.
Or having his wig pulled off by Tony Atlas, or we did a Beyond Wrestling American Run, and he wrestled Hornswoggle, and it was like one of the funniest matches like ever, ever. he's just a real asset to the business.
Yeah.
Might be, other people might say it asks something else,
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
but yeah, he's yeah, and don't mess with him. He's a tough MF-er too.
Well, for
Not even.
an exiled WWF Hall of Famer, right?
WWF, indeed, not
That's right.
WWE,
That's right. That's right.
WWF. So that might be the World Wildlife Foundation. Who
Yeah, who
knows? But
knows? Who
he's
knows?
got the ring to prove it.
How did the MLW job come about?
So I had been trying to get into MLW for a while, and that came about. What was it? November of 23. So Thomas Santel, the former Antonio Thomas, he
I
was
know him
actually a
well.
backstage
Yes.
agent.
Yeah.
Yes. And apparently there was a production meeting or something. And somebody of power said, does anybody know any, decent ring announcers out there? And Tom was like, yeah, I know one. He said he's the best.
Pretty decent.
So I, yeah, he's pretty decent. So they reached out to me. It's back when they were just doing New York and Philly. So I made my debut at the ECW Arena, 2300 Arena in Philly, in I think it was November 18th of 23, and it was like such a thrill. But I had always wanted to be there. In fact, I told Cort Bauer the first time I met him that night, we sat down and talked for a while, and I said, Cort, I said, I've been trying to get here for. He's like, we're so happy to have you. And I said, I've been wanting to be here for years. The only thing I ever got was your out of office reply. True story, like on an email.
Yeah.
But when like they would switch up ring announcers, I had friends that other friends that were agents and producers there, and they'd be like, all right, this is it, this is your shot, give me all your stuff. And then I would never hear anything. So now the MLW thing came up, and I was just supposed to be the New York and Philly guy, and now they're bringing me on the road, which is amazing. So New York and Philly has turned into Atlanta, Chicago, Dallas, going LA for Battle Riot. I'm super pumped for it. Like I say it loud, say it proud. I am actually thrilled to be like the official ring announcer for Major League Wrestling.
Yeah.
And like I said earlier, I know like so many guys there. And the best thing was the very first show I ever did, Matthew Justice tweeted after the show that it was so good to see and hear Rich Palladino at MLW tonight. And that just meant the world to
Yeah.
me, because it's like here were roster people that were like happy that I was part of the crew now. So yeah, I never take that for granted too. It's just what an opportunity and an amazing, amazing company and amazing roster, and just good people that seem to like having me around. So
Yeah, good.
ride it till the wheels come off.
That's right. What's the furthest that you've away that you've announced? Like the furthest distance you've traveled? Will LA be it, or have you done? I'm
LA
sure.
will be it. I have a sticky note on my desk that I look at every day of every state that I've worked in. And ironically enough, the only state in New England that I've never announced in is Vermont.
No kidding.
Yep, I've announced every other New England state. And then I had done like the New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, even got out to Delaware once for the ECWA. Remember the Super 8?
Yes, yes.
Not remember, it's still.
Still going.
I got to do the 10th anniversary one, which was really cool.
Oh, nice.
And it was like 2 months after my twins were born. So I was very excited to get away for a couple of days and go to Newark,
Yeah.
Delaware. But yeah, so LA will be the furthest destination that I've ever gone. Right now it's Texas, because I did just do MLW in Dallas in January. King of Coliseum when Matt Riddle won the title from Satoshi
Right.
Kojima. That's the furthest I'd ever gone for a show, so I'm pretty pumped for this one and
Yeah.
in LA.
And you've also done Ring of Honor.
April 5th.
Yeah, you filled in for Ring of Honor for in 2010, Bobby Cruise, correct? Help you out with that.
Yes. Bobby had Bobby Cruz had made plans, personal plans, to go somewhere, I want to say it was somewhere in Florida before they had booked the Ring of Honor 8th anniversary show.
Got it.
And Adam Pearce was actually the booker at the time. And
Oh,
he
yeah.
said, well, you can't be here. Get me a ring announcer, make sure he's good. So Bobby entrusted me. And I got to do the Manhattan Center back in 2010
Oh,
for the eighth
nice.
anniversary show when Tyler Black won the Ring of Honor world title from Austin Aries. And that was just, I couldn't believe it was a one and done. I did a dark match when they were out here in Massachusetts, maybe a few months later, but yeah, that's one of the things that I, one of my fondest memories
Yeah.
on a Greyhound bus to New York City because I was too afraid to drive in the city all by myself. And of all the New England guys that were working there at the time, there wasn't like one that schedule would have lined up that I could have gone with. So I took the bus from Boston.
There you go.
And it was one of the greatest trips. And I actually got to have dinner at a Chipotle, I think across the street from the Manhattan Center, with Adam Pearce before the show because he wanted to just go over, you know, the format and everything for the show. But, you know, it was just amazing. Again, every opportunity is a blessing. So that was one of my favorites.
One opportunity I want to ask you about. I see there's a few ECW posters behind you. Did you do ring announcing for ECW at some point?
I did here in New England from November of 96 till January of 99.
Oh, wow.
So a little over two and a half years. I did all their all the New England shows. Again, that was just an opportunity. I had gone to a show in Revere and I had like a comp ticket because I knew the local promoters were Paul Richard, former Kowalski trained referee. And a gentleman by the name of Mike Bonanski, who I just saw at an independent show I did for Focus Pro Wrestling about 10 days ago. So I had a comp ticket and I got to the top of the escalator at Wonderland and I saw Paul and he was like, "Brother, you got your tuxedo?" I'm like, "Of course." He goes, "All right, you're ring announcing tonight." And yeah, and I got hired by Paul Heyman that night. He liked what I did. He said, "Every time I come to New England, I want you to be my ring announcer." "Yes, sir."
Wow.
Absolutely. Yeah. Crazy times. And some guys there that I'm like still friends with, like today, Blue Meanie, Little Guido, Stevie Richards, Tommy Dreamer, like all of, you know, all of those guys just, you know, in the after ECW folded to still see them. And yeah, it was very intimidating, I will tell you that. I got bumped around a couple of times involuntarily. God rest his soul, Bobby Duncombe Jr. once literally chased me around the ring and just said, you know, don't let me catch you. And I literally ran behind the curtain at Wonderland. You know, just amazing time. And just the guys I got to work with was a who's who. Just absolute legends. And I did it for, you know, a couple of years. It was fun.
Yeah.
And it was but just in New England. I wish I had been invited if I ever wanted to go to any ECW show in New York, Philly, wherever. But I never really left my little comfort zone back then.
Yeah.
I wish that I had. I don't know if Heyman would remember me or not if he saw me today, but he was very good to me
Yeah.
when I was there. And I was very lucky to be a part of
Yep. All the events
that.
that you've announced, is there one that stands out as like, this is my favorite one I've ever done? Maybe it meant the most, or that was a lot. Hundreds and
Yeah,
hundreds and hundreds.
it's hard to pick one. You know, anytime there was like a title change that aired on TV that I was the ring announcer for ECW. I remember they switched the tag team titles in Waltham, Massachusetts. Like that was like a big deal to me because that aired on TV, and I'm like, "Oh, look at that! That's like a part of history." I want to say it was Doug Furness and Phil LaFon. Did they have the tag titles at one point? Or maybe it was the FBI and Candido and Storm, Chris Candido and Lance Storm. One of those title changes, man, I'm showing my age. One of those title changes took place in Waltham, Mass. So that was a big deal to me. But doing shows like at the Worcester Palladium for ECW in front of like a sold out crowd, and that building, if you've ever been to it, it's like a very historic concert venue.
Yeah, it's like a theater. It's like a theater kind of venue, right? I've been there. Yeah, I've been there before. Yes, a long time ago.
And Beyond's done a couple of shows there. Actually, one of the first chaotic shows I ever did was at the Palladium right when they first started. But it wasn't like, 2,000 people sold out, like literally could not one more seat to have in that balcony up there. But I will say it's very recent, but like last year, Beyond did a thing at Harpoon Brewery. We had over 2,200 people there. It was like a big festival.
That's right. Yeah, I saw the pictures.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that just, I wish I could have, I mean, the mental pictures in my brain, there's lots of actual photos, but just getting up into that ring after having a couple of harpoons myself that day and just looking out, it was just a sea of people. Really just phenomenal, and I mean, I've done some baseball stadium shows for Chaotic, in front of like 1,200, 1,300 people. Everything to me, even if it's at like the VFW and there's 50 people there, to me, it's just like people don't get it. It's just like it is my lifeblood. It is like I always say, no disrespect to anybody that I'm that's family or anything. I always say it's the most important thing in my life that doesn't have a pulse or a heartbeat, in all honesty, because I never want to discredit, family or my kids or anything. But it's just, it is honestly the thing that just sometimes keeps me awake at night, but just keeps me energized. It's a crappy Monday at work, and I'm like, all right, in 72, 96 hours, whatever it is, I'll be doing wrestling. Everything's going to be okay.
It's the
So,
constant. Yeah.
yeah, but I mean, I did. I've got to do some really cool things. I mean, I did a show for Northeast Wrestling at Six Flags in Jackson, New Jersey, for like 3,000 people, filling in for my friend Kurt Adonis, who couldn't make one show when he was working for them. I remember going all the way down to Six Flags, and there was like not an empty seat in the house, and we had Mick Foley, Booker T, John Moxley, Renee Paquette, Enzo, Big Kaz. It was just like, I'm just like, wow, I got the best gig in the world. Darby Allin. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, remember when Darby Allin was coming up here to Maine for Limitless, like wrestling Brody
Working.
King
Yeah.
and
Rory King, Ace Romero, some of those guys at the Portland Club. Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, they're all special to me. Again, if I had advance notice, it would be hard to pick one since 1993 to 2025.
Have you, I assume you've done a Mania weekend before,
I
right?
have.
And was
I
it in
have.
like I assume like New York, New Jersey, Philly,
Yes.
or what is that? How many of those have you done? What is that like? Because I mean, we see for the wrestlers, it's like show, but there's also ring announcers that are show, and a lot of them take place luckily in one spot, like a lot of the GCW shows and things like that. But take us kind of like how that works from your perspective.
Yeah, I did like the one-offs that would turn into two or three offs. I did Orlando, like Beyond did like a midnight show when WrestleMania was in Orlando. I want to say 2017, maybe. We did like one show, which I ended up doing commentary with MLJ for like an all women's like WrestleCon super show or something that I was literally just hanging out. I got to ring the bell for Revolution Pro. They like needed somebody that knew how to work the table. And I'm like, oh my God, I can't screw this up, put the phone down, make sure you're paying enough attention. So that was like one thing. And then we did a one-off in New Orleans for Beyond as well. When we were just a one show, but then both of those years I ended up doing interviews at WrestleCon. Like somebody was just like, hey, can you do interviews? I was like, no format, no nothing. Like the way I'm dressed now in like a hoodie and a baseball hat, like literally just going table to table and interviewing people.
Oh, no kidding.
And another New England guy, good friend of mine, Aaron Stevens, he was with TNA at the time, or Impact, whatever they were called then. And he had been there for a year or 2 years, and he had just opted not to re-sign with them. So he broke that news in an interview at WrestleCon to me that ended up getting like, I don't know, 20 or 30,000 views and was picked up by like Sports Illustrated. Damian Sandow, no longer with Impact Wrestling and stuff like that. And he told me after, he's like, you're the first person I've told that I did not re-sign with Impact. Do whatever you want with it. I was like, damn. So the guys at TitleMatchWrestling.com were very excited. So those 2 years I did that. But then when they did Jersey City, the same year that like Ring of Honor and New Japan did Madison Square Garden, I did 8 shows over like 3 days. I did Chinela, Spring Break 1 and 2. I did Bloodsport. I did Shimmer Women's Wrestling at La Boom in Queens. I did a chaotic show in Rahway, New Jersey. I did Pancakes and Pile Drivers for Sami Callihan at the Manhattan Hilton. Damn, what else? Oh, and I did an IWTV special, like all different independent promotions. Most of those were at the White Eagle in Jersey City, New Jersey. So I think I rattled off 7. I did something else in Jersey City, but that was pretty intense. I just remember driving home and just being like, oh my God.
Not talking for a week.
And honestly, it's like I didn't even go to WrestleMania, and that was the year that Kofi won the title.
Oh, yeah.
And I really wanted to go, but I remember driving home so pumped, full of adrenaline after Janela's Spring Break 2 on the Saturday night. It ended at like 2, 3 in the morning. I'm like, I could drive home. Merritt Parkway, rest stop, 2 pillows in the back seat, just sleeping away for probably 3 or 4 hours. I thought I could make it, and I just got so exhausted. But it's a lot. But it's always you want to just try and offset. What do you got for bookings, and what's it going to cost for you to have a pillow to sleep on and a place to crash and food to eat and whatever. So that was the craziest. I am not going to Vegas, as much as I would love to. I had a couple of things I was talking to people about, but I don't know. I just it's a lot, and I'm getting older. So I just don't know. And I'm traveling enough right now as it is, so I'm very content. But that one in 2019, which was the year before the world shut down, that was a real special time, and a lot of miles and a lot of driving back and forth and tunnels and
Oh my God.
craziness. But yeah, it was awesome though. It was
Do
awesome.
a couple
And I
quick.
had done, I think, the first ever Beyond. I'm sorry, I the night before I went to Jersey was the very first episode of Beyond Wrestling Uncharted Territory, which
Oh
was our new
yeah.
weekly series. The
Yeah.
very first episode, I remember Masato Tanaka was there. And I remember that was the night before heading out to New Jersey. So I probably banged out 9 shows in like 4 days. It was insane.
That's great. A lot of like do you tea or like lozenges or anything keep your voice kind of good, or you just kind of at this point kind of know?
Water and Halls sugar-free citrus drops. I always have them with me. And sometimes if a commentator's struggling, I slip a couple over onto the table. I'm like the old lady with the Werther's, I'm like, here, just take one of these. It'll soothe your throat a little bit. But I've strained my vocal cords in the past. I've had shows where I was like introducing Nick Gage and I had no voice. Even that was just painful. But no, but knock on wood. It's the only tool I've got. I gotta maintain it best I can. So
That's right.
that's
That's
why I
right.
always got a big thing of water next to my desk all the
I'll
time. So
do a couple quick hitters and we'll get you out of here. Appreciate the time. This is a
course.
couple questions from actually Limitless fans. I asked if they had any questions. One they had, do you have a favorite indie talent you've seen over the years that you're surprised never made it to the big time?
I'm very partial to my home promotion of Chaotic Wrestling because I've been there almost 25 years. And Matt and Brian Logan, I'll go on record as saying, probably the best tag team that I'd ever seen that did not make it. They did a lot of stuff with Jim Kettner's ECWA, and they did like a lot of traveling and dark matches, for the bigger companies and stuff. But and that's old school, And I'm not just saying it because they're friends of mine, but that was one that surprised me. And in another sense, Chase Del Monte as well, who's cut from that same cloth. I always felt that he was something special, but again, he did so much, but I just think that those are three guys right there that, I wish had, made more money than they did.
Yeah.
So they didn't deserve it.
Are there young talent that you've seen out there now that have really kind of opened up your eyes, like, wow, this is, they got something? I'm sure you've seen a
My
lot of them.
and I always and I always say it like to my friends, I'm like, don't ever tell my New England friends, but like my favorite guy to watch out there is Bobby Orlando.
Bobby, oh yeah, from Shook
I
Crew.
just it, because I used to sit at Killer Kowalski's school like and just watch classes, and Walter would always say, what are you going to do that's going to make them notice you? Well, what doesn't Bobby Orlando do to make people notice him? He's one of my favorites, but with this whole new ID program, I'm just waiting. I want Bobby to have one of those ID things too. He's just one of my favorites, but there's so many guys. I think Anthony Green is still destined to make a lot of money in this business. I'm surprised, and he's wrestled everywhere, whether it's WWE, AEW, TNA, Ring of Honor. And he just got back from Japan. I don't know, his fifth or sixth trip to Japan. He's another one. There's so many. I always say in the back of my mind, like I want to always tweet out, like if I ever promoted a card, like these are my all-stars. But I'm like so sensitive to everybody's feelings. Like I wouldn't want to offend
Yeah,
anybody.
that's right.
And I work with hundreds of wrestlers. I always call out Bobby Orlando because I just think he's so unique. And he fully utilizes social media to really get his name out there. He's such a character. But like I was saying, all these WWE ID kids, I'm so happy to see guys like Bryce Donovan, Marcus Mathers, and Ricky Smokes, and Brad Baylor. I mean, there's just so much good talent out there, and the world's going to see sooner than later, not just the ID kids. I just think there's so much good talent out there.
Is you've met so many what our world would consider celebrities. I'm sure they would walk down the street some places and people would not know who they were. Have you been starstruck before? If so, by who? And is there anyone out there you have not met that would make you say, wow, and be like, get the sweats a little bit, you know what I mean?
I got to introduce him once, but I even though it was like 2012-ish, Bryan Danielson, I was
Oh.
kind of like, that's friggin' Bryan Danielson, or sometimes if I do get to go backstage at certain places, I'll give you one from an announcer standpoint. I was backstage at a Ring of Honor event, the new version of Ring of Honor, and Tony Schiavone walked by me, and I like literally just I didn't even go up and introduce. I really wish I had because that's a picture that I would love to have. My Instagram is just me and wrestlers, as you could tell. Sorry, family, but I got other social media platforms for them. But just seeing Tony Schiavone, I really wish I'd gone up and introduced myself. And I will take it back the very first time, God rest his soul, that I got to meet Howard Finkel
Oh
because
yeah.
he was literally like my inspiration. Like I used to watch Joe McHugh, look it up, old school. He was the ring announcer on WWF Championship Wrestling. And then another gentleman who I've actually become friends with, Gary Michael Capetta.
Yes, I have his book over here, Body Slams. Yes.
Yes,
Yes.
and as do I. And the first time I met Gary Capetta, I was very starstruck because as a ring announcer, and then like at one of those WrestleCons, I got to interview him, and it was just so relaxed because now I knew him, and now it's like I would never say we're peers because the stuff he did and the stuff I've done, he's worlds above. But he's somebody that we have a mutual friend, and that mutual friend always says, "Oh, GMC was asking about you,"
Oh,
and that
great.
always means the world to me. But that very first time I met Howard Finkel, I was just like jaw dropped, and then we got to co-host some New England Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame events together.
Yeah.
And I'm very sad that he's no longer with us, but he was just the man.
Yeah. When I was doing stuff for EWA and we had a title change, I would always do, and knew just how he would do it.
Yes.
And that was just in my head. I'm like, it's just, I mean, that's the soundtrack of my childhood in a lot of ways, just that moment, you know,
Yeah.
I'm doing my hands, the mo you know, yeah, just the
Yeah.
that thing. And he there's nobody like him ever,
Yeah.
ever, ever, ever. Yeah. And
Yeah.
Gary Michael Pettit is such a different style. It's very like he didn't have these like peaks and valleys that I remember. It's just, but his voice is so unique. And it's this
Yes.
one fall, like just the way he did, it's just very,
Yes.
but it had a gravity to it without being overbearing. It's the best way I can describe it.
Yeah. Yeah, and he and you think about Gary, did WWWF back in the day, and did AWA and WCW, and he did a lot of the higher profile things that the Savoldis did. And then when Ring of Honor started, I think he was doing like ringside interviews, stuff like that. I mean, seen and done it all. I know I've said it a couple of times here, but for me it's like the announcers. And one of these days I am going to meet Tony Schiavone and I'm
Yes.
going to get that damn picture. But I've also met Jim Ross a couple times too, and I remember that being very intimidating too.
Yeah.
But he was very, very nice man.
Yeah.
So
Career changing advice you got from the Sandman, of all people.
I did another interview. Sandman was the one that told me when the fans are chanting something, don't cut them off. So when I was doing ECW, I would introduce the heel and they'd probably be chanting, F you or you suck or whatever.
Yep.
And then I'd go into introducing the baby face. And it was actually Sandman told me, yeah, he said, let them, whatever they're chanting, let them do that. Don't worry about times and all that stuff. Just, and for me, especially ECW, I was super nervous because I did. There was a lot of stuff going on back then in the 90s, a different time. I just want to get in, do my job, get out. Never know if they're going to start hot or whatever. But yeah, it was the Sandman told me, whatever they're chanting, but if they're singing or chanting or whatever, don't start that intro until they're done. So, and yeah, that was, of all people, got
Yeah,
that from Hack.
you
So,
know.
yeah, it's amazing. Amazing.
Final question. This will be for the Loons fans. They'll understand this. What's better? Which city? Yarmouth, Maine, or Yarmouth, Mass?
Wow, yeah, man. I can't believe all the shows I've done in Yarmouth, Maine, and I had a complete brain fart. It was this dude, I think it was in January.
Yes, it
I
was.
just, yeah,
Yeah,
and man, they.
I'll set up for the people. So, Rich was announcing a show in January in Yarmouth, Maine, which Limitless Road runs, 99% of the shows there. There's a town also in Yarmouth, Mass. Of course, Rich is mentioned from Massachusetts, and Rich, just going through and all of a sudden just says, next month right here in Yarmouth, Mass. And the fans just start going, boo, and they let him have it.
I didn't even catch myself. I didn't even not even catch
That's
myself.
right, because you didn't know what we you caught you
No, I'm
didn't yeah
like,
you
what?
didn't know.
Why are they love me here? Why are they booing me?
Yeah,
And I just remember when all was said and done, I'm like, all right, are we done, fans? Are we done? Okay, can I? But yeah, I will never make that mistake again. And I can't even, I wasn't drinking. It was nothing. It was just,
a
there was
slip of the tongue,
just
yep.
so much going on. And the funny thing is that my family and I vacation in Yarmouth, Massachusetts, down in Cape Cod. And beaches and all kinds of great stuff. Every summer we would rent a house in Yarmouth or Yarmouth Port. So I remember one of my friends was like looking at my calendar, like non-wrestling friend, and we were out dinner, drinking, whatever. And I'm like, yeah, this is how what my weekends look like. Oh, dude, you're gonna be in Yarmouth? Because he has a house down the Cape. I'm like, no, that's Yarmouth, Maine. He hadn't seen that the ME instead of the MA, but yeah, I'll never screw that again. Sorry, fans of Limitless. I did not mean it. I am a Massachusetts guy, but I love coming to Maine though. I'm not pandering, honest to God. It's like I've turned down bookings like 15 minutes from my house because I am committed to Limitless Wrestling.
Yeah.
I would rather drive 2.5, 3 hours to be a part of that. And everybody there is so nice to me, except when I made that one screw up. So,
But they accept you back. very, very quickly afterwards, and I'm sure plenty of places around you've done have done the same. You've been more than generous with your time. This is what talk I've wanted to have for quite some time. So it's glad we're able to make it happen. Before I let you go, of course, give a chance to promote. You have shirts available. You have social media.
I do.
We could spend another hour going through your dance card for the rest of March and so on and so forth. But where can people follow you, check you out, and buy merch and all this good stuff? The floor is yours.
So I'm old, so I am mostly on Facebook under Richard Paladino because some scumbag stole my identity and I lost my old Rich Paladino page.
Oh,
So if
really?
you're communicating with Rich, it's not me. I'm Richard. So that's Facebook. At Rich Paladino on Twitter or X, whatever Elon wants to call it. Ringside Rich on Instagram. I have a TikTok. I think I've made like three videos with my daughter and/or a dog of mine, my dogs. But I don't really use that a lot. I did just sign up for Threads. I don't know how that works. So yeah, Ringside Rich on Instagram. And yeah, I used to weigh 300 pounds and Worcester, Massachusetts christened me Sexy Rich when I lost the weight.
Yeah.
So I have Sexy Rich shirts and a lot of new 8x10s that I just got. And I'm putting two kids through college. So if anybody wants to buy one, I'm happy to sell you one. And I have a brand new t-shirt coming out very, very soon that's something that I've wanted to have for a while. And my friend that is designing it, it's one of the students at Chaotic, is designing it for me as we speak. So.
Good stuff.
But yeah, March is crazy. Every Thursday night at Electric Haze, Worcester, Massachusetts, Wrestling Open. Going on 25 years of Chaotic. So if Chaotic's running, I'm there. And then, of course, Limitless every month. And hopefully more, Randy. Let's get more shows because it's the best wrestling in Maine. And of course, I would be remiss if I did not mention. Live pro wrestling, Focus Pro Wrestling, but Major League Wrestling. Follow them on YouTube. The events, all the premium live events are now on YouTube, streaming live. And Battle Riot from the Commerce Casino right outside of Los Angeles, Saturday, April 5th. And then we're back in Chicago on May 10th at Cicero Stadium. And we will be back in New York City, June 26th.
Look at
So.
that. What a pro.
Yeah,
What a pro.
busy, busy.
One last question before I forget. Have you
Of
ever had to
course.
miss a show due to illness or due to weather? At 30 years, 31 years, I'm sure it may be one or a few, right?
Yeah, nothing that I couldn't. If the promoter canceled it for weather, then obviously that's not on me. Yes, I have missed a couple for illness, but I have to be like on my deathbed. And it's been a long time. I can tell you, it's been a long, long time. Since I've been too sick to do a show. I mean, even when I was hungover as hell in New Orleans, I made a midnight show for Beyond Wrestling, pale white as a ghost. I am never drinking. New Orleans was just, it was dangerous. It was a very, very dangerous place for me to be.
Yeah.
And one of the, yeah. But no, I, one way or another, I'll make it. And I hate driving in the snow, but I do have a pickup truck. So it's a little more bearable. And I just made my first appearance for Rad Pro Wrestling in Amesbury, Massachusetts,
Yes.
last month in February.
At the brewery, right? They
And it
still
was
running
only because
there?
their ring. At
They
where?
they're still running at the brewery?
This was at, I forgot what it was called. It was like a Knights of Columbus.
Oh,
I
gotcha,
can't remember
gotcha.
the name of the hall. But they're doing a lot of stuff, Newburyport and a lot of stuff. But their regular ring announcer, Ace, is from New York. And we got a bad snowstorm that weekend. So they contacted me. And I'm like, sure, the snow's not going to start till later Saturday night. And an hour ride home took me like almost three.
Oh no.
So yeah, I'll be there one way or another. But yeah, no, I have to be on my deathbed to not make a show. And I miss family events for wrestling shows. I'm angry right now because I'm gonna miss a Limitless show over the summer because it's the same day as my nephew's wedding, and
Oh,
it's my nephew. And I am going to miss like another show for another promotion before then for his bachelor party and stuff like that, because I'm like the cool uncle, I guess. But I don't like missing shows. And like I said, I have a 9 to 5. I have a stretch in April where I'm going to be in San Antonio for my real job, for a conference. And I got to miss a couple of shows here and there. So I don't like missing shows, but yeah, I have to be dead or crippled to not make a booking. I live for this shit.
Have tuxedo, have microphone, will travel. Rich Paladino, thank you so much for
Amen.
joining me. This has been great. Thank you.
Thanks. Pleasure.